Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast, where the force will be with you always. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside Michael F. Florio. We got Randy at the controls. And I guess first and foremost, Florio, happy Star Wars Day. I don't know how many people are seeing our videos of this, but we are both decked out in Star Wars gear for May 4th. So happy Star Wars Day to all who observe.
Yeah, happy Star Wars Day. Are you going to be watching any of the movies or anything today?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I know Patrick Claibon has started this morning a rewatch of the prequels because he is on a personal mission to let everyone know that the prequels are not as bad as maybe you think they are. So he actually texted a bunch of us this morning with the opening shot of The Phantom Menace. So I know what he's doing today.
Do you think, I know this is a football podcast, but I've seen two of the last three Star Wars movies that have come out, and they're all right, and I heard the third one, I still have to watch it, I heard it's not great, but do you think the three newer ones not being up to the level of the original three helped the three prequels?
I think it does. I definitely think it does. Although I will say this, I went back and I watched the prequels sort of on my own. I was motivated after watching all of Clone Wars to go back and watch the prequels, and I've made peace with them. Phantom Menace episode one is not bad if you watch it in the lens of being a kid's film. If you think about it, it's a film made for kids, and you're like, oh, okay, this isn't so bad. Episode two stinks. There's just no way around that. It stinks.
I that's the one that lost me.
But I will say that the dogfight scene at the beginning of episode two might be the best dogfight in the entire franchise. So at least it has that going for him. But overall, the movie stinks. And episode three is legitimately good. Revenge of the Sith is an actually good movie. So I went through and I've made peace with the prequels. I'm okay with them. I haven't watched any of the sequels a second time. I saw them all once in the theater, and I haven't had the heart to go through and watch them again. One day.
I have to. Me and Nicolette were doing a little Star Wars binge before we started doing Marvel, and we watched the original three, and then we watched half of episode one, and she started to fall asleep, and we were like, yeah, we'll pick it up one day, and we never did. So I guess that tells my biggest beef with it, though, is I was a kid when it came out, and I thought Darth Maul was awesome.
He is,
and I wanted more of him.
Well, good news is he did survive. Spoiler alert, if you watch Clone Wars, which you should, which is an excellent series, he does make an appearance in there. So, you know, that's something to just keep in mind if you ever go back and finish it. So there it is. Otherwise, we got a lot to talk about. I don't know if you heard, but the NFL picked teams last week. They were in Las Vegas. I was there for about a day and a half of it. Football Coachella, which I'm trying to make a thing, by the way, because that's sort of the best way to describe it. I mean, it's people in brightly colored jerseys and costumes, and it's like a festival for a few days. I mean, you've got music and booths and food, and obviously then, you know, every 15 minutes or so, Roger Goodell comes out and reads a name and people go berserk. The Blue Man Group, right? Ice Cube showed up there, right? The Weezer did a set. I mean, it was a whole thing. Chris Angel got himself out of a straitjacket, hanging like, you know, 100 feet above the air, above the stage. So it was a good time. Football Coachella for sure. I was able to talk to some fans one day. If I actually, you know, get my stuff together and actually go through and listen to the interviews, I'll try to put some of that together. Ask folks their thoughts on who should be the first pick, you know, about their regular individual teams and some fantasy stuff as well. So hopefully one day we'll actually get organized enough to actually get that involved on the pod. But on the show today, we will talk about some of the picks, some of what we expect from some of these rookies this year, and you know, some of the guys maybe who are veterans who might have been winners or losers based on what happened from this draft weekend. But a couple of things first to get to. First of all, a big piece of news that was announced this morning. The NFL announced its international games for 2022. As always, we will have games in London, three of them this year, at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, a pair of them there, one on October 2nd. That'll be the Vikings and the Saints. One the following week on October 9th will be the Giants and the Packers. And then on October 30th, at Wembley, it'll be the Broncos and the Jaguars making their annual trip over to London. So the Jags kind of continuing to build that London fan base as they have been for years. But a couple games outside of London as well. Mexico City, the league will return to Stadio Azteca. That's on November 21st. The Cardinals, or the 49ers and the Cardinals, that one in late November. But the big one, kind of the new one, in Munich at Allianz Arena. That's November 13th. That will be the Seahawks and the Buccaneers. So Tom Brady. So the folks in Germany get to see Tom Brady. You and I were talking, Florio, before we started recording. We had the chance to talk to Jakob Johnson, the former Bucks or Patriots fullback, I should say, who was released not that long ago. But he is German. I mean, he was born, raised in Germany, came over to the States, is playing in the NFL. We feel like one of these teams, whether the Seahawks or the Bucks, they've got to sign this guy so he can go back and he can play NFL football in Germany. It only feels right.
Yeah, he's a fullback here. We spoke with him at Radio Row, and I mean, no disrespect to fullbacks. They're not the most well-known players on the football team. But he said in Germany, like, he can't go out without getting recognized anymore. Like, he's that big of a celebrity. So he's already played with Tom Brady. He's caught a pass from the GOAT. I mean, there's a natural connection there. Let's get him on the Bucks, at least for that game. And the people of Germany should be very happy that Tom Brady came back, because if not, that could have been like Drew Locke versus like Kyle Trask. But instead, they get the GOAT. So you got to love that.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking. Jakob Johnson actually currently is on the Raiders roster. But I feel like we should be able to engineer a swap at least for 1 week where, agreed, like, you know, like some sort of exchange program where he goes to see, look, let's send him to Seattle. Pete Carroll likes to run the football. Why not give him a fullback for a week that he can play around with? But I feel like Jakob Johnson should be granted a chance to go and play football in Germany. But so there it is. Those are the international games for 2022. If anybody in the NFL media hierarchy is listening, Florio and I would love to go to one of these games.
Or all.
Or all. But I'll just settle for one. And, like, I'm not going to be particular. Whichever one you want to send us to, I am down for it. London, Munich, Mexico City, don't care. We just would love to go to one of these games.
It would be a good time.
It'll be a great time. Absolutely. I've been to London. Have not been to Munich or Mexico City. Would love to see them.
Same.
So there. All right. Actual news that relates to fantasy and kind of what happens on the field. And this was kind of a big one from a couple of days ago. The NFL announced that DeAndre Hopkins has been suspended for 6 games for violating the performance-enhancing drug policy. He released a statement saying that he has never intentionally taken anything, that he's very conscientious about what he puts in his body, but he is going to be out for the first 6 games of the season. He can practice with the team. He can be in training camp, but when week one starts, he will be sitting on the sidelines. First thing is for him, how far should this knock his ADP down? If at all, maybe he stays the same, but should this knock him down? And if so, how far?
I think it definitely should knock him down. I mean, we're talking about close to half the season that he is not going to be out there now. And originally in like early best ball drafts, he was going as like a wide receiver two, like top like 15, 16 wide receiver. But I kept thinking like, hey, this guy, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a wide receiver one. So I saw a lot of value in D-Hop. Now I think it certainly knocks him down. I'm trying to figure out just how far. Like, I don't think I could put him in the top 20 wide receivers, but I feel like, you know, like putting him outside the top 30 is too low. So somewhere for me, it's going to be like a low end wide receiver two, maybe a high end wide receiver three, because I still think after that 6-game suspension in the other, what are you going to get now? 9 games out of him. You're going to get wide receiver one production, I think. So I wouldn't knock him down too far.
So, you know, last year was sort of a down year for him. He played 10 games, was injured late in the season, didn't even have 600 receiving yards, which was, you know, even in a down year, that's shockingly low for DeAndre Hopkins. Did have 8 touchdowns, which sort of salvaged a little bit of that. But let's say he gets back closer to what his career average has been, you know, closer to about 80 yards per game. That still gets you to about 880 yards. If he can still get you in the neighborhood of, you know, 6 to 8 touchdowns, I mean, that still gives you, I think, some solid kind of wide receiver two type value. So maybe you are talking about drafting him somewhere, maybe outside the top 20, but I still think he's going to be a guy that is going to end up being a value for somebody, just because when he is there and back on the field, we know that the Cardinals are going to lean on him heavily. We'll talk about the Marquise Brown deal in just a little bit, because that, I think, is going to have some impact too on how the Cardinals offense goes. But pivoting this now to Kyler Murray, we saw that offense just not look remotely the same once Nuke Hopkins was gone last year with injury. And you saw Kyler's production take a big dive when he didn't have Hopkins on the field. How worried about Kyler should we be? I mean, this is a guy that we're talking about drafting as a top 3 or 4 quarterback, but if he doesn't have Nuke Hopkins for the first 6 weeks, you know, how concerned should we be about his production?
I definitely think we have to be at least somewhat concerned. I will say them having Marquise Brown is an upgrade, because he's a better second wide receiver than anyone they had last year. And he's operated before as a team's wide receiver one. So I don't worry as much, I think, as last year. But you look at it, like you said, with and without D-Hop, he was averaging 26 fantasy points per game with D-Hop, 21 per game without. That's a 5-point per game drop. That's big. Like, his touchdowns were almost cut in half. He was throwing like 25 less yards per game as well. And we always know that the thing with Kyler is it comes down to, is he going to run or not? But I've had Kyler as my QB4 behind what I think is the big three in Allen, Mahomes, and Herbert. But I think now this pushes him more into everyone else in that tier. Like, if you're debating between Kyler and Lamar already, maybe this is enough for you to now push Lamar over him or Joe Burrow over him. So I still have him in that secondary tier. I still think Kyler Murray has the QB1 upside, but it's obviously a lot harder. And I think his floor is lowered a bit without DeAndre Hopkins.
I mean, I do think, again, he sort of becomes, I don't know if he's a value, but he comes down a little bit where you're not reaching for him. Whereas I think if he went into the season with a full complement of receivers, you're talking about having to reach, say, I don't know, 4th round, something like that, to get Kyler Murray. I think now you are able to maybe wait a couple of rounds, still have him on the board. So in the places where, you know, say last year I was drafting a guy like, say, a Dak Prescott, kind of feeling that mid round, I think now you're going to see Kyler sort of land in that area as well. So, you know, understanding that, I don't want to say you have to survive the first 6 weeks, right? Because if he's still giving you 21, 22 points per game, that's not bad. I mean, we praise Jalen Hurts for giving you 20 points no matter what. So if you're getting that out of Kyler, I think that's okay. But, you know, if you can kind of abide that for the first month and a half, and then once Nuke comes back, hopefully things really take off, then you really might be onto something at that point. So that feels like a good way to transition into the draft itself and a lot of the things that happened in Las Vegas over the past weekend. And a big part of it was the trades. I mean, we saw a lot of teams trading picks, moving up and down. The Ravens in the 6 picks in the 4th round, which seems absolutely insane that they dominated basically like 20% of the 4th round. That's just crazy. One of the big deals, though, was in the 1st round, the Ravens sending Marquise Brown to Arizona for a 1st round draft pick. There was a whole lot of maneuvering that happened, and actually your Buffalo Bills ended up sort of getting in on that because the 23rd pick, which had gone to Baltimore, ends up going to Buffalo. They get a – it's a whole thing. Anyway, the point being, Marquise Brown now lives in Arizona, which means that all the jokes about Van Nuys Brown, maybe they become – you know, he becomes like Scottsdale Brown or Mesa Brown or, you know, whatever, Chandler Brown, who knows. But for fantasy, is this a fit? Does Marquise Brown fit in this Arizona offense? And how willing are you – how high are you willing to take a shot at him in drafts?
First, I'm always impressed that you know so many cities in every state. Like, it's very impressive. I think this is a clear fit for Arizona. Kyler Murray and Marquise Brown played college ball together at Oklahoma. He led that team in catches, in yards, and was second behind only CeeDee Lamb in touchdowns. My God, that was such a fun Oklahoma team that year. But I think it's a natural, like, they have chemistry there. Apparently this had been in the works. Like, this has been a done deal for a while already, and we just didn't find out about it because both sides wanted to keep it under wraps. Like, Marquise Brown was at the Cardinals draft party, so clearly this had been a done deal before Thursday. But I before the D-Hop suspension, I was thinking that Marquise Brown would be kind of similar to what he was in Baltimore, like a boom or bust wide receiver. Who I thought I would like more as my third wide receiver, you know, somewhere in like the closer to wide receiver 30 off the board, maybe. But he maybe would get pulled up to be a wide receiver two. Now with D-Hop out for the first six games, I'm thinking Marquise Brown easily is a wide receiver two. And it's funny, on draft night, I made a poll. Who would you draft first, Rashad Bateman or Marquise Brown? And Bateman ran away with like 65% of the votes. And then I made that poll 2 days later when DeAndre Hopkins got suspended and Marquise Brown ran away with like 65% of the vote. So right now I think I'm on the side of Marquise Brown, but which one would you take first, Marcus Brown or Rashad Bateman?
I mean, I would probably take Brown first because we know we're not going to have Nuke for the first 6 weeks. And in terms of passing ability, I would tend to lean Kyler over Lamar. I mean, and this isn't a knock on Lamar. He's a great quarterback, and certainly for fantasy, we love him, but he's going to run more than Kyler will. We've seen that the last couple of years. In terms of distributing the ball as a passer, I think I have a little more faith in Kyler Murray. But I think it's funny you running that poll twice sort of highlights what we kind of already know is how much fantasy opinion, you know, changes with the wind. And what and every little piece of information that we get out there. And not to say that this isn't a significant piece of information, but the fact that, you know, one day it can be swung so far in favor of Rashad Bateman, and a couple days later, one thing changes and it swings completely the other direction in favor of Marquise Brown is kind of funny. Also, if Marquise Brown was at the Cardinals draft party, and this was in the works for a while, how is it that Lamar Jackson seems so caught off guard by it? I mean, him tweeting like WTF and just seeming super shocked when it did seem like this has been building. I mean, Brown saying he wanted out, the Ravens basically granting his wish. So it seems like, you know, somebody didn't keep the franchise quarterback in the loop of what was happening.
And I heard Marquise Brown said that, like, he was like, I speak with Lamar at the end of every season. And he was like, I told him, like, this just isn't a system that works for me. And I get it. It's a system where you have to block a lot and it's not a normal system for receivers. But yeah, like, I saw people speculating, like, maybe he was upset that they didn't draft a wide receiver in the first round. It's like, no, like, clearly Lamar felt out of the loop there, in my opinion. And if that's the case, then you probably have bigger problems right now than who's your wide receiver one.
Right. That just that kind of blew me away. Like, in the moment when I saw the tweets, I was like, oh, wow, I guess this really came out of nowhere. And then you learn more information afterwards. And you're like, wait, this seems weird that somehow they didn't tell Lamar that they were going to, you know, move their, at least the guy who on paper was their wide receiver one. That seems strange, but yeah, I think right now I want Brown certainly over Rashad Bateman at this moment. Does this mean that Rondale Moore has to wait another year to become a thing? I mean, you know, Nuke's coming back. Hollywood Brown is there. Call him Hollywood for now. You know, AJ Green re-ups for another year. It just feels like this is another year sort of delayed on the potential development of Rondale Moore.
Yeah, there's just not enough targets to go around, right? Like, maybe early on in the year now with no D-Hop, he can carve out a role as, like, the slot guy. But when D-Hop returns, if everyone is healthy, you're going to have Marquise Brown and Zach Ertz there as well. That's three big target guys. So, and then you have A.J. Green and Moore competing for snaps and targets. Maybe Moore can run away with it so much early on that, like, you can't take him off the field even when DeAndre Hopkins comes back. But them getting Marquise Brown was definitely a big blow to Moore's value.
I got to go also back to Baltimore, right? Because obviously Rashad Bateman, in theory, gets a big share of the targets there. I mean, is it basically just come down to him and Mark Andrews? Is that it when we talk about Baltimore pass catchers now?
Yeah, I think it's them two. And they brought in Tyler Batty. Like, maybe him and, like, Dobbins could see some targets out of the backfield. But yeah, for fantasy, like, I'm not gonna tell anyone to get excited for, like, Devin Duvernay. Like, it's Bateman, it's Mark Andrews, or it's stay away.
I would say never, because I have the feeling we'll get to, like, week 14 and we're looking for sleepers and it'll be like, hey, Devin Duvernay, give him a shot, because, you know,
yeah, I could see that.
That sort of thing happens every single year. So that was one of them. The other big trade that went down in the first round that certainly shocked everybody. The Eagles nab A.J. Brown from the Tennessee Titans. The Titans then turn around with the number 18 pick, and they draft Treylon Burks, the wide receiver out of Arkansas. But, I mean, really the big news here is A.J. Brown, who, you know, at one point it looked like maybe he was going to be traded. Then it looked like the Titans were willing to hang on to him and try to, you know, keep him happy and make things work. Then all of a sudden, he ends up in Philadelphia. So going from Ryan Tannehill to Jalen Hurts, does A.J. Brown make a significant move in your rankings one way or another?
Yes, but not the way I think people might anticipate. Oh. Like, I'm dropping A.J. Brown in my rankings. I had him as a wide receiver one before the draft, but he literally went from the only team, like, the Titans throw the second fewest in the NFL last year. The only team that threw fewer than them was the Eagles. So he landed on a team that doesn't throw the ball a whole bunch, but then they have more target competition than the Titans do. Like, the Titans had basically Brown, it was Robert Woods, and that was it. Now you have Devonta Smith, who is going to see a good amount of targets. I mean, he's a player the Eagles are very invested in long term. You're going to see Dallas Goedert getting volume there. There's going to be the running back. So I think that A.J. Brown is still going to be a very useful fantasy piece, but I don't think he's going to get a 30% target share like he had last season. So because of that, I've lowered him a bit. I like him more, I would say, as a wide receiver too, closer to like I think he's kind of borderline top 20. I haven't updated it yet, but I think that's where he's going to kind of settle in. And I'm saying the same, like, I'm going to lower Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert as well, because I just don't think there's enough volume to go around to make all of them better than they were pre this trade.
I think that's my concern is, you know, can they sustain that many pass catchers at a high level? And I'm not sure they can. I have kind of kept Brown static. I haven't moved him one way or another. I definitely don't think, you know, that he necessarily gets a huge boost. I don't think he necessarily falls off either, though, because I think he's in a situation where they're going to ask Jalen Hurts to get him the football in space. And one of the things he does so well is run after the catch. I have said before that he reminds me kind of a young Anquan Boldin, in the sense that he gets the ball and he just will bully defenders. I mean, we have seen him carry multiple defenders down the field with him, into the end zone with him. So I think that kind of makes him an interesting fit in Philadelphia as a guy who can just kind of get open, you know, in underneath intermediate routes, and just kind of let him work with the football in his hand. So I think, you know, in that respect, you know, I think what we're going to see from him in Philly will be a lot similar to what we saw from him in Tennessee. But I think your point is valid that, yeah, he's got to share targets now. It's something that he hasn't had to do in a little bit because, you know, last year, Julio Jones really was invisible for much of the year, wasn't on the field for a good chunk of the year. You know, even this year, had he stayed, he was going to be the alpha. As much as I love Robert Woods, you know, Woods isn't going to come in there and suddenly take over and be the alpha in that passing game. So he is going to have to share with Devontae Smith, with Dallas Goedert. I think, you know, you talk about Rondale Moore being pushed to the background. Jalen Reagor is being pushed to the background. JJ Arcega-Whiteside has I think he's becoming a tight end now.
He's trying.
Right. Because it's not working out as a wide receiver. So, you know, Brown comes in and obviously is going to command a lot of attention. So if he moves down, what happens to Jalen Hurts in your rankings?
I'm moving Jalen Hurts up. This is one of those offenses, Marcus, where I don't necessarily feel great about any individual piece, but I feel tremendous about the guy throwing them the ball, because I can't tell you, because I'm thinking, even if they start throwing the ball more, they're not suddenly going to be like the Chiefs or Bills or one of these teams that like abandon the run. So the passing numbers are still going to be somewhat that, like, for the receivers, there's less margin for error when you're getting less volume. But when you're Jalen Hurts, and now all of a sudden you could, like you said, you could dump it off to AJ Brown and he could pick up a bunch of yards in space. That is only going to help Jalen Hurts' passing numbers. And then the fact that AJ Brown is going to demand so much defensive attention near the line of scrimmage. Typically, I like receivers that help open things up downfield, but I think with Jalen Hurts, he struggled on the deep ball last year, and it was easy to throw multiple defenders on a Devonta Smith. Now you're not really going to be able to do that, and now you're going to get Jalen Reagor on the other side getting some one-on-ones downfield as well. So I think Jalen Hurts is a big winner here, and I think people forget how good he was last year. Like, we saw him get destroyed in the playoffs, and I know that left a bad feeling in a lot of people's mouths, but before he hurt his ankle late in the season, he was a top five quarterback averaging over 25 fantasy points per game, and he finished as the QB6 on the year. I think he has the potential. I'm not saying it's not like in the most likely scenario, but I think one of his range of outcomes is finishing as the top scoring fantasy quarterback this year. And I think he deserves to go in the tier with like Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, if you want to put like Deshaun Watson and Joe Burrow in that tier as well. I think that is where Jalen Hurts belongs.
The Jalen Hurts hype was real as soon as that trade was announced. I mean, you know, fantasy Twitter kind of took off. I appreciate you willing to be a little more cautious with it, because I mean, I think I saw people just literally planting the flag that like Jalen Hurts is the QB1, book it, no questions asked. I'm not quite there yet, but I do see it, you know, in the extreme range of outcomes is potentially there. I think any chance if you were somehow hoping to get a draft discount on Jalen Hurts, I think you can kiss that goodbye now, because I don't think that's going to happen. Because again, it only takes one person in your league to love him and draft him early, and then that opportunity is gone. And I think that's going to happen now. I think what makes it hard to sort of evaluate Jalen Hurts is last year he felt like one of those guys who was really good for fantasy, but we weren't sure if he was an actually good quarterback. You know, there were times.
I don't know if we still know.
I don't think we know, right? I still don't think we know. Like, I think he's a good fantasy quarterback. Like, all those times, you know, we would constantly joke that no matter what, he was going to get you 20 points, that he might go in the fourth quarter with like 8. And he would get you 20 points one way or another. But, you know, when you actually watch him, you're like, yeah, there are definitely a lot of things that can get better about Jalen Hurts. But one of the things that you can't use as an excuse anymore is that he doesn't have weapons, because he's got weapons now. And we know he can run.
And while I love him for redraft, like in Dynasty, I don't know what to think of him beyond this year, because I think the Eagles are doing it smart. They're giving him weapons, like you said. No excuse now, but if he doesn't take that next step, the Eagles have multiple first round picks again next year and can easily get themselves a quarterback.
That is sort of the thing that makes him hard to evaluate beyond a year-to-year proposition, right? Is because the Eagles haven't given us any indication that they are willing to commit to him long-term. And if you're talking about dynasty quarterbacks, you want to know that that guy is going to be entrenched as the quarterback. I mean, you know, if you're talking dynasty quarterbacks, right, you know Josh Allen's going to be in Buffalo, you know, as long as he wants to be there. You know that Joe Burrow's probably going to be in Cincinnati for a really long time. Jalen Hurts is, I mean, he's renting month to month, right? He's like, you know, like the lease is up and he's going month to month, and you really just don't know how much longer he's going to be there. And that sort of makes it hard. Over to Tennessee, though, mentioned Robert Woods. You know, he goes there after leaving the Rams. They draft Treylon Burks, who I felt like Burks's stock was sort of dropping the closer we got to the draft. People loved him early. I joked about the story of him boar hunting with a knife and a dog, and everybody's like, oh my God, I got to have this guy on my team. You know, and then it kind of, you know, people started to look deeper and like, okay, well, route running is not really great. And you look at what he did at Arkansas, and a lot of the way they got him the football was sort of bubble screens, short passes, and just kind of letting him work. And I think that sort of made people a little bit worried. This is an offense that's still Derrick Henry centered. Which of the Titans receivers would you prefer, and kind of where would you think about taking him?
I like Treylon Burks more. I'm cool with taking him as like a wide receiver 3, maybe in like the 7th, 8th round, something like that. I think this was the I was one of those people, Marcus, that was souring on him a bit. I was like, his touches were manufactured. I don't know if he's going to fall into a spot that'll give him that opportunity. And I think he fell into the absolute perfect landing spot because they had a very similar player in A.J. Brown. Like, Daniel Jeremiah's player comp for Burks was A.J. Brown. And I remember saying, like, during the draft process, like, I could see why everyone comps him to A.J. Brown. To me, he was, like, a smaller, not as athletic version of A.J. Brown.
Right.
So maybe we get 75% of the production that we had been getting out of Brown. That'll still do. And the reason I'm taking him over Robert Woods is because not only do I think he can settle into that A.J. Brown role, but he's going to be healthy and working out with Ryan Tannehill all summer long, whereas Robert Woods is still rehabbing from a torn ACL at 30 years old. So to me, I don't want to write off Bobby Trees. I'm not doing that. But it wouldn't surprise me if his best football is behind him already, and he now plays that complementary role to Treylon Burks, who is the team's number one.
I liked Robert Woods when I felt like he was going to be a complement to A.J. Brown. You know, when he was sort of the number two there, I felt like that was a good spot for him to be in. You know, I wonder how much they're going to ask of him early in the season, you know, depending on how quickly Burks can get acclimated and kind of get up to speed. I just wonder how much they're going to ask of Robert Woods. And as you mentioned, I mean, a guy who's 30 years old coming off a knee injury, you know, if he's ready for that. So I can't say that I'm super excited about either one of these guys. I think I don't know that I would take a shot on either of them before, say, like the 7th round or something like that. But maybe Burks is probably the guy to lead with there. And I think you're right. And you're not the only person I've heard say this, that he is sort of a less athletic A.J. Brown with not quite as good hands, which is not a way to get me excited about the guy. Okay, so now that we have poo-pooed their pass core, pass catching core, does that mean Ryan Tannehill still a draftable fantasy asset?
Only if you're desperate. Like, I think he's more of like a low-end QB too. Like, for me, if I'm taking a second quarterback, I want to take someone with upside, and I don't feel like Ryan Tannehill really brings much upside, especially now that he has Malik Willis breathing down his neck potentially. Like, I'll go with young upside quarterbacks like Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, and this one might be gross to say, Marcus, but I'm warming up to the idea of Zach Wilson being a young upside quarterback as well. So I would take all those guys over Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I mean, I think Wilson's an interesting name. And that's one I don't think we'll get into it on this show, but I certainly, before the summer's out, I'm sure we will discuss Zach Wilson. This feels like a very big, it's not a full-on prove-it year for Zach Wilson, but I definitely think everybody wants to see improvement from what we saw last year. Especially because they've given him help. Everybody loved the Jets draft. We'll talk about, you know, we'll certainly talk about Drake London, some of those guys. But Garrett Wilson, I should say. I think I had Drake London stuck in my head because I think I expected him to go to the Jets. So Garrett Wilson. Same. Garrett Wilson is the guy that they added there in New York. So we'll kind of get into that too a little bit as well. By the way, where do you come down on on Ryan Tannehill saying, he doesn't feel like he needs to mentor Malik Willis? I mean, I feel like smart, reasonable people have kind of come down on both sides of this conversation. Do you have a particular opinion on it?
I totally get where Ryan Tannehill is coming from, because I wouldn't feel great being like, hey, you brought this guy in so you basically could fire me. I'll get him ready even quicker. I completely get where he's coming from. But what it tells me is that he's concerned about Malik Willis, because you wouldn't say that if you had nothing to be fearful of, in my opinion. Like, Joe Flacco's the original one of starting this, and we saw how that worked out for him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, Tannehill's right in that he's under no obligation to be a mentor to Malik Willis. It would be a nice thing to do, but he is not obligated to do it. So I certainly understand kind of where he's coming from. And you're right. I think it does signal that he's a little bit worried. He's looking over his shoulder. He's looking over his shoulder for, you know, for his job and the young guy who may be coming to take it in the very near future. All right. I can take a break. We'll come back. We will dive into some of the different positions, get some thoughts on, you know, who we think is going to be a success right away and who maybe might have to wait a little bit. That's next on the NFL Fantasy Football Show.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, let's take a look at some of the positions. Look, I broke this down into quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers. Like I say before, not to say that some of these tight ends can't blossom into anything, but you know, generally speaking, we're going to have to wait. There are no Kyle Pittses in this draft, so let's start with the quarterbacks. We took a long break, right? We had Kenny Pickett drafted in the first round, and then we waited a long time before we had another quarterback come off the board. So of all the guys, I mean, with Pickett going, with Desmond Ridder, Matt Corral, Malik Willis, all these guys, who do you think landed in the best spot to have immediate fantasy success?
I think it's easily Kenny Pickett. Like, he's the only one drafted that the team is going to feel any need to, like, we need to get something out of this guy. All the other ones were, like, third-round picks or later, so if they don't work out, you could just easily move on and draft another one. But Kenny Pickett, I think he's going to be their week one starter. I don't think you use the 20th pick on the most NFL-ready quarterback, the hometown hero kid, and you're not going to play him. And even if he sits, I don't think it'll be long for all, because Trubisky would have to be so much better than the kid at that point to get him in. Plus, I mean, there's good pieces around them in Pittsburgh, probably the best weapons of any of the teams that drafted a quarterback. Do you have a proven RB1, a proven wide receiver one, a young up-and-coming tight end, and then really strong secondary wide receivers in Claypool and Pickens and Calvin Austin now? So I easily think Kenny Pickett had the best landing spot of the quarterbacks.
I think a lot of what we were hoping for, wishing for, was Malik Willis to go to Pittsburgh to take that upside that he has and take that athleticism and pair it with all those weapons you talked about, because you're right, of all the teams that needed a quarterback, Pittsburgh felt like the most ready-made situation. You know, look, I know the story is great. You got a guy who played at Pitt, now he's staying in the city and he's playing for the Steelers. It's certainly a great story. And he does feel like he is set up for success, right? Just get the ball to Deontay Johnson, take some shots down the field to Chase Claypool. In a pinch, if things go bad, you can dump it off to Najee Harris. We saw a lot of that last year from Ben Roethlisberger. So it does feel like he's in a situation where he can come in and maybe be the most productive fantasy quarterback as a rookie. You mentioned, you know, some of the other guys, Desmond Ridder, Matt Corral. You know, you've got Ridder, who went in the third round to the Falcons. I mean, he was the second quarterback off the board. Again, it took nearly two full rounds before that to happen. Matt Corral goes late in the third round to the Carolina Panthers. Those are two teams that, you know, have starting quarterbacks, but neither of those quarterbacks feel like they are a lock to be their team's start. Side note too, as well, if I'm Mitch Trubisky, I'm a little bit salty right now, right? Because I signed in Pittsburgh really feeling like I was going to be the starter. Then all of a sudden they spend a first round pick on a guy, and now my job is very much in jeopardy. But looking at the Falcons and the Panthers, right? Two teams in the same division, their quarterback situations are certainly not settled. Which one of these guys you feel like is more likely to start a game first? Is it Ridder or is it Corral?
I think this is a great question, because after Pickett, I think these are the next two in this class that we see start. I'm going to go with Desmond Ridder just because he was drafted earlier. The Falcons had their pick of anyone but Pickett, and they went with him. He's also, I think he has more experience. He was a 4-year starter in college. That was the thing that was big for him. Plus, I think you could run a very similar offense with him and Mariota. So because they can both move and scramble and add some yards with their legs. I'm not sold on either Darnold or Mariota. I think this one could go either way, but I'm just going to go with Desmond Ridder, who's the oldest looking 22-year-old I've ever seen. And I thought it was funny. He came, he was like, "I'm not going to stop until I win a Super Bowl." And I'm like, that might not be up to you, but okay.
I mean, yeah, some guys can play a long time and never win a Super Bowl, never even get to a Super Bowl. So I appreciate the optimism and the ambition. But you're right. It's not completely in your hands. I would say the other thing sort of working in Ridder's favor for me is that Corral is still kind of working his way back. He had that ankle injury that he suffered in Ole Miss's bowl game. And you know, I know he's rehabbing and he's sort of working and that sort of thing. And that's been great. But yeah, I just wonder whether or not he's going to be completely ready right away at the start of the season. Also, this weird thing of the Panthers really working hard to convince us that they love Sam Darnold. You know, I don't know if they really, really mean that. I don't know if they're hyping him up to try and, you know, engineer a trade. I don't know, but they really at every opportunity keep trying to convince the general public that they love Sam Darnold.
I just had to Google Marcus Mariota's contract. It's about $7 million, whereas Sam Darnold's making something like $15 million.
Yeah.
They had no draft picks this year because they gave him all the way to get him. They took his fifth-year option. I think they are much more, as you know, they're not super tied into Sam Darnold, but I think they have a lot more on the line with him than the Falcons do with Mariota.
They're more pot committed to Sam Darnold at this point. So maybe that's why they're telling everybody that they love him, because it's like, we're stuck with him, so we might as well make the best of it. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. Malik Willis. I mean, obviously we were all hoping for fantasy purposes that he went somewhere where he would have a chance to really compete for the starting job in his rookie year. I don't think that's going to happen in Tennessee. I mean, look, Ryan Tannehill at this point in his career, he's no one's franchise quarterback, but he is good enough where I don't see him losing that job, you know, short of like a devastating injury. Like, this is going to be his gig. And so for Tennessee, they have the luxury of waiting a year or so to give the reins over to Malik Willis. That's great for them, stinks for us. But is there a chance we see Willis take over as a starter this year, or are we really talking about, you know, 2023 and beyond?
I think more than likely we're talking about 2023 and beyond. They do have an out in Tannehill's contract after this season, so they could easily make the move then. I think the only way we see Willis outside of an injury, like you said, this year is if the wheels kind of fall off for Tennessee. And that is very possible given how loaded the AFC is. Like, it might be when the division or you're not making the playoffs for the Titans. So maybe if they fall a couple of games behind the Colts, like we see him late in the year take over. And then I think once we see him start, I don't think there's any going back to Ryan Tannehill. So I'm saying the absolute earliest is the end of this season. But what I'm concerned, like, not for fantasy, he's not going to be fantasy relevant, but we saw packages with Lamar Jackson before he was brought on to be the starter. We saw them do that with Jalen Hurts at times, a little bit with Trey Lance last year. I just want to see plays where, like, Malik Willis and Derrick Henry are running the option together.
That'd be great. I mean, it'd be terrifying for a defense, but it'd be great to watch. Yeah, I do think if everything kind of goes sideways, then we see Willis maybe get on the field. But, I mean, you look at the division. Indy, I think, is the only real challenger for the Titans in the AFC South. I mean, you know, the Jaguars You know, they have a long way to go. The Texans, again, similarly, I mean, they had a lot of holes that they needed to fill, so they got a long way to go in terms of being competitive. So I think the Colts are the only real competition. And I feel like as long as the Titans are in the division race and have a chance to make the playoffs, and I think they're going to stick with Tannehill, which, you know, I can't really fault them for that. So I think we're going to be waiting a little bit before we actually see Malik Willis sort of take over this. You know what? Titans fans, you should go shake hands with 49er fans and see how they feel about, you know, look, I'm not saying you're going to feel about Tannehill the way 49er fans feel about Jimmy Garoppolo, but sort of watch, you know, keep your eye on that space and see how the Niners handle it. And maybe the Titans can figure out a better solution than to go into, early May with two quarterbacks.
How many days are we since Jimmy G threw a?
You know, we've lost track. The text messages have stopped. We've given up. You know, I think you know, my friends are still hoping that something happens, but I think they've realized that counting the days has become futile. all right. Let's look at the running backs here, because, you know, no surprise, we didn't see a whole lot of running backs go early. We didn't expect to, but again, also no surprise, the first running back off the board is Breece Hall, and he ends up going where we didn't really want him to go, that being to the New York Jets, because they have a running back that we like in Michael Carter. So who'd you rather, Breece Hall or Michael Carter, when it comes to redraft leagues?
Yeah, this sucks for fantasy. I've been very high on Michael Carter. I thought I was going to have him on a bunch of teams this year. I wanted Breece Hall on the Texans. That's who the Jets jumped to get him. I'm going to go with Breece Hall here, though. I don't think you trade up into the early second round to take a guy, knowing that you already have Michael Carter on your roster, to make him be the backup. Like, I think we're going to see a committee here. I don't think Michael Carter gets phased out either. But if I had to guess, I'm thinking it's something like 60-40 maybe, where Breece Hall is. I think he's the bigger back. I think he'll get the goal line work. I think he'll get the bulk of the early down work. I think he'll still see some targets, but I would expect Michael Carter to get some more pass game usage. It's a situation where it's going to be frustrating for fantasy, but I still think Breece Hall is more of an RB2 and Michael Carter more of like a flex guy.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. It does stink that now these guys are going to be sharing time. Someone suggested to me that, hey, maybe it's not a big deal because Michael Carter was able to be successful in college. He was on the same team with Javonte Williams, and both those guys were able to eat. And I was like, maybe. But, you know, when you also have the Jets going out and adding a guy like Garrett Wilson, that suggests they also want to throw the football quite a bit, and they want to try to help out their quarterback. So there may not be enough touches going around for both those guys to have a major fantasy impact. So you are talking about Hall, like you said, maybe as an RB2 and Carter as a flex option. You know, I don't know that this is going to be even like what we saw in Denver last year with Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. I'm not sure that Hall and Carter can be that productive together, just because I don't think this offense is going to be quite that good just yet. So, I wish it would have been different. I wish it would have been better. Again, this is a move that feels a lot better for real football than it does for fantasy football. So we'll see how the Jets sort of make that thing happen. The next running back to go was Kenneth Walker. He ends up going with a 9th pick in the second round to the Seattle Seahawks, which is proof, in case you forgot, that Pete Carroll still wants to establish the run. All signs had been pointing to Rashad Penny being the guy in Seattle this year. Chris Carson, who has been really good for the Seahawks, still dealing with that neck injury. And even though I know the folks in Seattle are trying to be optimistic, there is still a chance that Carson, you know, doesn't play football again, or if he does, is really limited. Maybe we're waiting a while. So does the addition of Kenneth Walker kind of signal that maybe the Seahawks are a little more worried about Carson's neck injury than they're letting on? Does this mean maybe the end of Chris Carson in Seattle?
I think so. And that was my initial read on it as well. They have a post June 1st out, I believe, in his contract. So we might not see it for a month, but this is a guy that had a severe neck injury, like you said. It's bigger than football at that point. So you hope the best for him. But my viewpoint is, listen, they've already invested a lot of money into Rashad Penny. I know it was just a one-year deal, but Rashad Penny is one of the top 15 highest paid running backs in football right now. So my read on this situation is still, as long as he's healthy, I think Rashad Penny is the lead back here. Even though in drafts, like the couple of drafts I've seen since the NFL draft, Walker's going first. So I think Penny is a value there. But if you're a team like Seattle, that's clearly, maybe they don't want to admit it, but if they're being honest with themselves, they're in a rebuild right now. You don't take a second round running back to be your third string running back there. So to me, I think they realize probably done with Carson. I think they know already what his future is. And then Penny's been so hurt. So to me, it seems like a need thing rather than a let's take this guy to be depth here. So that all indications to me is that Carson's probably done in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate too, because he's a guy that I loved. I always wondered why he didn't get more respect from fantasy drafters. It was just, you know, he'd always kind of hang around that fourth round, fifth round, you draft him, and then he was always kind of a fringe RB1, you know, when he was healthy and on the field. But you know, hopefully everything's okay with the neck, and you know, whatever he does, whether it's football or not, he ends up living a healthy life for the rest of his time. But this does kind of say to me that, you know, the Seahawks, they want to run the football. They also want some insurance for Rashad Penny, and I don't think they have supreme confidence that Chris Carson can be that guy, at least not in the very near future. A couple other running backs that were drafted a little bit later, Damian Pierce goes second pick in the fourth round to the Houston Texans. Tyler Allgeier goes eighth pick in the fifth round to the Atlanta Falcons. Similar to what we talked about with the quarterbacks, right? Neither of those teams has what you would call a for sure locked in RB1, right? In Houston, you're looking at some combination of Rex Burkhead and Marlon Mack. In Atlanta, yes, you have Cordell Patterson, who was really good last year, but also sort of faded down the stretch. And you wonder, you know, whether or not they're going to kind of ask him to continue to carry that same workload. They also, speaking of the Falcons, released Mike Davis. So that opens up a situation. So that, to me, begs the question, who is more likely to become his respective team's RB1? Is it Pierce or is it Allgeier?
I think it's Pierce, because Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead, I think, can easily be beat out there. And I think if Pierce shows what he's capable of, he will beat those guys out, I think, sooner rather than later. Whereas I think with the Falcons, like, they need a second running back. We saw that last year. Patterson did run out of gas down the stretch. But I don't think they're going to completely get rid of Cordell Patterson. Like, he's too dynamic, I would say, and was too good last year. And I think, like, he'll continue to see targets out of the backfield. So while I think there's a path to fantasy relevance for both of them, like, I think of all the running backs outside of, you know, like Hall and Walker, these guys, you can make the case, landed in the best situations. But I just think Pierce, like, he has a chance where he could legitimately see like 250 plus touches this year.
Yeah, I mean, Houston, as you mentioned earlier, that was the place that we were hoping that Breece Hall would go, because it just felt like he'd be a slam dunk in that situation there. The Texans admittedly had a ton of needs. So the fact that they waited maybe a little bit longer to get a running back, not a huge surprise there, but I do think that Pierce walks into a situation where he can compete right away. And even if he is not the starter in week one, you know, as long as he's showing progress and can be productive, I think he starts to take over that job. You know, Rex Burkhead is always kind of a nice complimentary piece, but it always feels like we hear from Rex Burkhead late in the season after a team has either had a bunch of injuries, or they just have guys who just aren't getting it done. Then it's like the Texans will turn to Rex and say, all right, we need you to kind of help carry us a little bit. And, you know, Marlon Mack, again, sort of similar. You know, he's a kind of a nice addition, but I don't think any team is going to lean on him to kind of be the workhorse in that offense. The 49ers drafted a running back. They take Ty Davis-Price out of LSU late in the third round. My first thought was that this has nothing to do with Eli Mitchell, that it even has nothing to do with Trey Sermon, who really was just a ghost for the Niners this past year. My thought was that this has to do with Deebo Samuel and Deebo saying that he doesn't want to be a running back this year. You know, knowing that they've lost Raheem Mostert, that they've lost some guys in that backfield, that, you know what, let's bring in another running back. So hopefully this makes Debo happier, feeling like he can be more of a full-time wide receiver this year. I think that's kind of what this move was. But, I mean, Florio, you know, when the 49ers have multiple running backs, they all seem to get some time, and they all seem to have at least one or two games where they are fantasy relevant. So I guess the question is, will Ty Davis Price end up being fantasy relevant by the end of the year at some point?
I want to say I hope not, because I want Eli Mitchell to just stay healthy and be great all year long, but probably. I mean, he missed a bunch of time last year. They're not sold on Jamichael Hasty. They use basically identical draft capital on Davis Price as they did Trey Sermon, and no one is nearly as excited about him as they were Trey Sermon last year, but Sermon couldn't see the field, so... Yeah, it's definitely any running back on the 49ers roster can easily become fantasy relevant, because Kyle Shanahan's system is what you want. You don't necessarily want the individual running back.
That's the thing. I mean, I feel like when people talk about changes to fantasy and people will say, we should use like team running backs, I think it's because everybody's looking at the 49ers. And they're like, you know what? It's just such a headache trying to figure out who it's going to be. Let's just have RB 49ers, and let's just draft the system instead of the players. And so, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you should draft Ty Davis Price. I'm not even going to tell you that he needs to be like some sort of waiver wire darling, but I'm just telling you that at some point during the season, we will be on this show, or maybe it's Fantasy Live, or maybe it's one of us writing a column where his name's going to appear, because the Niners have somebody hurt, or we just read a practice report that suggests he's getting more opportunity. Just you can mark it down. At some point during the year, Ty Davis Price is going to have some fantasy relevance. That's just how it is. all right. I guess this is the wide receiver position. Obviously, this was a deep position. We could go on and on and on about it. I tried to just limit this to three questions because the show is already getting long, and I know that folks have work and lives and stuff like that. Of all the guys, obviously Drake London was the first wide receiver taken in the NFL draft, but a whole lot of them went. Who should be the first rookie wide receiver drafted in fantasy?
Drake London. And I don't really think it's close. Like, Garrett Wilson went to a team that has multiple other receivers who could take away targets from him. And Olave is now behind Michael Thomas. Jameson Williams is banged up right now, and he went to a team, let's face it, Jared Goff is Jared Goff. Drake London is going to get all the volume. Like, him and Kyle Pitts, they should just, let's give both of them a 50% target share, and everyone will be happy. I think, though, he can easily be a wide receiver two this year. I think he could catch a bunch of touchdowns. He's got the size, the ability. He was, I know, both of our wide receiver ones, so I was happy to see him be the first receiver off the board. And I think he fell into a great landing spot where he's going to get peppered with targets from day one.
I think that is it. I mean, I had been saying, and I even made a TikTok about it, about who's going to catch the ball besides Kyle Pitts. Well, the answer to that appears to be Drake London. You know, so those two guys are going to get so many opportunities. I'm sitting here scrolling through the rest of the Falcons wide receiver core, and it's, I mean, it is a collection of cast-offs from other teams, right? You got Damir Byrd, you got Chad Hansen, Kadarrell Hodge, Auden Tate, Olamide Zaccheaus. I guess he's not a cast-off. He's been in Atlanta. But the point remains that these aren't guys that you can lean on to be the foundation of your passing game. Meanwhile, you got Pitts. We know what he can do. You've got Drake London. We know what we think he can do. So I think those guys get a ton of work. And at least when you talk about the quarterbacks, we hope Zach Wilson gets better this year. We at least sort of know what we're working with Marcus Mariota. We at least have an idea. We've seen that movie before. It's not the most exciting, but it's not terrible. And I think that at least gives me a slight more level of confidence in London, versus, say, what Garrett Wilson can do. I mean, we kind of know what Jameis is, but as you mentioned, Michael Thomas has been such a target magnet. And look, Alvin Kamara, if he's there and healthy, he's going to see a lot of targets too. So maybe that sort of takes a little bit away from Olave. So, yeah, I'm going to double down with you on Drake London there. The Lions go out and they draft Jameson Williams. And he's the 12th pick overall. Obviously he's still rehabbing an injury, so we're not even sure when we're going to see him on the field for the Lions. But I thought it was interesting because Not that long ago, I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but not long ago, I remember waking up, and as I have a bad habit of, is scrolling Twitter like first thing in the morning. Same. And I remember I woke up one morning and I'm scrolling as I'm still laying in bed, and my whole timeline is arguing about Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I was like, you know this, when you wake up and check Twitter on the West Coast, like the rest of the world is very much already deep into the conversation, so we're still playing catch up. So I'm scrolling and I'm Googling and I'm like, did something happen to Amon-Ra? Am I missing some? What happened? And they're like, no, he just happened to be the main character on fantasy Twitter that day. We're just arguing about what his potential could be. And a lot of it was, you know, how are you going to feel about it when the Lions spend a first round pick on a wide receiver? Well, they did. I'm squarely in the camp of, you know me, I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I love what he could do. I was big on him, especially in that back half of the season when he really blew up. I personally am not super worried about him, even now that Jameson Williams is there. And not just because of the injury, and that's going to take Williams some time to kind of get up to speed. I just think he really helps that whole offense. I mean, I don't know. How are you feeling? I mean, does this have a major impact on St. Brown now that Williams is there?
I'm on the other side of it. I think this is a good thing for St. Brown, and I'm happy to see everyone panicking, because I was with you. I loved St. Brown last year in draft season, and I wrote about him basically every week in the waiver wire article, but I didn't love in early draft seeing people take him as like a wide receiver too. And to me, I was like, well, I loved the guy last year. I'm probably not going to have a lot of him this year. But now we're going to see his draft go down, and he's probably going to be a wide receiver three, and I'm fine paying that, because Jameson Williams, I think, it complements Amon-Ra St. Brown's skill set. Like, I think they're the perfect duo, because Amon-Ra St. Brown operates out of the slot, closer to the line of scrimmage. Jameson Williams is one of the best field stretchers, the best field stretcher in this class, I would say. And that's clearly something the Lions were emphasizing. Like, last year, late, they brought in Josh Reynolds. Oh, and that's when Amon-Ra St. Brown started to break out. Then they said, all right, we need to emphasize that position. The only big contract they gave out this year was to DJ Chark, who's a field stretching wide receiver. And then they draft, like, so clearly this is something that the Lions have been emphasizing. And I think Jameson Williams, who looked miserable in his press conference, I think, though, he will be a good fit there with Amon-Ra St. Brown for the future.
I do too. I'm not really worried about St. Brown. And maybe you're right. Maybe this helps us because the ADP gets knocked down a little bit. But I think what we saw, the fact that he can get open and that he earned Jared Goff's trust, you know, the comparison had always been that, at least in terms of what he could mean for the offense, it would be a little bit of like what Cooper Kupp meant for Jared Goff all those years in Los Angeles. Again, I'm not saying that he's going to give you Cooper Kupp numbers. He's not going to necessarily be a triple crown winner that has, you know, bananas production. But in terms of what his value could be, I do see that. And I don't think that changes just because they added a DJ Chark or now that they've drafted Jameson Williams. So I'm not quite as worried about Amon-Ra, and I'll be glad for the ADP discount. Couple other names of note. Christian Watson goes with the second pick in the second round to the Green Bay Packers. I laughed because they let Marquez Valdez-Scantling go, and they pretty much just replaced him with an MVS clone, essentially, by getting Christian Watson. And then you get Sky Moore, who I know a lot of fantasy folks really loved. He goes later in the second round, 22nd pick in the second round to the Kansas City Chiefs. So you got two rookies coming in to situations where a lot of targets have been vacated, right? Devontae Adams leaves Green Bay. Tyreek Hill leaves Kansas City. So there are a lot of targets that are up for grabs. They've got two of the top-tier quarterbacks throwing, with Aaron Rodgers with the Packers and Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs. So in terms of just potential opportunity for fantasy, you really couldn't ask for better. So who you got, Christian Watson or Sky Moore?
This is one that I keep going back and forth on. And I liked Sky Moore better as a prospect. I love the landing spot. I thought Kansas City was like the ideal spot for him. But I keep going back to, like, Watson has the chance to be Aaron Rodgers' number one target this year. And it's like between him, Alan Lazard, and Sammy Watkins. So because of that, because I don't think there's a chance that Sky Moore can be the Chiefs' top target. Like, I think at best he's probably third behind Juju, and I think Kelsey's number one. So because of that, I will go with Watson. but it's one of those things where like I'm going with Watson, but everything it like wants me to go Sky Moore.
I keep wanting to go Sky Moore too. You mentioned Juju is in Kansas City. MVS is also in Kansas City. And I think the Chiefs will sort of use them in combination to replace Tyreek Hill. Like I don't think you can easily replace Tyreek with one player, but I think you can sort of use Juju as kind of that slot guy to kind of work underneath, and you can use MVS as that field stretcher. And you know, when their powers combine, they can sort of be Tyreek Hill light. And I think that is the problem that Sky Moore has to overcome, at least in that first year. I think he gets on the field. I think he can get some targets, but I don't know that he's going to be the guy. Whereas, as you mentioned, with Watson in Green Bay, the competition doesn't feel quite as stiff, right? Maybe Alan Lazard ends up as the wide receiver one early in the season. But again, you're not going to replace Devontae Adams' production with just one guy. And I think Watson is much closer to the top of the wide receiver depth chart in Green Bay than Sky Moore is going to be in Kansas City. So, I keep coming back to the Chiefs have not done a really good job of drafting wide receivers in their recent history. I think they sort of fell into Tyreek Hill. Nobody expected Tyreek Hill to be the player he was. I mean, he was a later round draft pick who blossomed into one of the best receivers in the league, but I don't think anybody sort of saw that coming. So their track record at the position has not been particularly great. Maybe it changes this year with Moore, but there's just a lot more targets for Mahomes to get the football to. And so maybe that sort of keeps his production a little bit depressed in the first year. So I capped it there. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty more wide receiver stuff we could talk about, and I'm sure there's plenty more that we will talk about between now and say like August. Side note, I'm in my first dynasty rookie draft right now. In fact, I need to go and look and see where it is.
We're in this one together.
Oh, are we in this together? Are we in the same? You know what? That shows how much I pay attention to the other teams in the league. Like I'm just kind of like looking at myself and seeing what's happening. In fact, I'm gonna be on the clock in just a couple of picks. I was the third pick. I took Kenneth Walker. Drake London went first. Breeze Hall went second. I took Kenneth Walker. To this point, only one quarterback off the board, and that was Kenny Pickett at the eighth spot. So, interesting. I was wondering where Malik Willis might go now that we know he's probably not going to be a starter in his first year, and he's still very much on the board right now. So, I don't know. Just throwing that in there.
Get him in the second.
Does he go? I think he will go in the second. Or has he gone yet?
He has not. So
he is not.
He might fall to you.
I don't think he's going to get out of the second round. I will go on record here on this podcast and say that if he's around in two more picks when I'm on the clock, I'm probably going to take Malik Willis.
I was hoping he'd fall to me at seven, but I'd be cool with
him. Yeah, I will also say, so my quarterbacks in this league are Russell Wilson, Daniel Jones, and Trey Lance. Drafting Malik Willis gives me like two real big upside quarterbacks with no real track record of production. Plus Daniel Jones. So it would very much be a crapshoot on my dynasty roster if I end up drafting Malik Willis and a couple of picks there. All right, so before we go, want to look at some kind of superlatives from this. Winners, losers, that sort of thing. So let's start. The biggest winner from draft weekend, it can be a rookie who just got selected. It can be a veteran that's already on a roster. But who do you think ends up coming up big out of this weekend?
We spoke a lot about him already, but I think it's Jalen Hurts. Like going into this draft, it was like the Eagles need another receiver, and they came away with who would have been the number one receiver in this class in AJ Brown. So they got a top wide receiver there to pair up with their quarterback, who already had a number one wide receiver and one of the top tight ends. So I think Jalen Hurts' stock really rose. It was already very high, but I think it's even higher now.
I'm going to go maybe outside the box with my winner for this one. I'm going to say Jared Goff. We just talked about all the emphasis that the Lions are placing on the wide receiver position, right? Or the pass catchers in general, right? I mean, they already have St. Brown. They have Hawkinson. We know DeAndre Swift can catch the ball out of the backfield. They go and they sign DJ Chark. They add Jameson Williams. They are really loading up. And maybe this is for a future that doesn't include Jared Goff necessarily. Maybe they are sort of positioning themselves for next year's draft or whatever when they go and try to maybe find a franchise quarterback. But at least in the short term, Jared Goff is the guy who's there, and he is the recipient of all this love that the Lions are putting into their wide receiver position. So I think he gets a sneaky bump. I'm not going to tell you that he's a QB1. I think he's still a QB2, but I think he's a QB2 you could have a little more confidence in two quarterback leagues, or if you're the kind of person who drafts a second quarterback just to as sort of a backup, as sort of, you know, just kind of insurance. I think Jared Goff suddenly has some more appeal than he did this time, say, a week ago in a lot of fantasy leagues. All right, so that's the winner. Who was the guy who catches the biggest L, again, rookie or veteran, from what happened last weekend?
Rookie, I think it's Malik Willis, but veteran, I think Michael Carter, sadly. He's someone that I thought could have saw 250 touches this year. I thought he had RB1 upside, and instead it's just so capped now by Breece Hall. I think his ceiling is probably being an RB2, and there's a chance, I think it's a small chance, but there's a small chance like Michael Carter's not worth rostering if Breece Hall really runs away with the job. I don't expect that again, but I think Carter definitely was one of the biggest losers this weekend.
Yeah, that one definitely hurt, and he was very high on my list of the guys who catch a big L with what happened. But the guy that I'm leaning with is Justin Fields. I thought the Bears were going to go out and do something to really help that offense. And I didn't really see it. I mean, the first couple of picks were safeties. They drafted Velus Jones, who was a former USC guy who ends up transferring to Tennessee. But I think Jones's future is more as a special teamer and not necessarily a guy who contributes on the offense. They did take a couple of offensive linemen, but that was, you know, day three of the draft. I really thought this was a chance for them to go out and sort of build around a guy that, yeah, I guess they believed at one point could be a franchise quarterback, but you know, you look at that wide receiver room and it's Darnell Mooney, and then there's really nothing else to really get super excited about there. I mean, you know, I don't know if Daz Newsome becomes that guy. They get Byron Pringle, Equanimeous St. Brown. There's just nobody there to really give Justin Fields some help. I know, you know, our pal Adam Rank was trying to put a brave face on it on Twitter. I kind of, you know, gave him a little bit of a needling about that. But, I don't know, man. Like, we were hoping that Justin Fields could take a step forward. And maybe he does, but they didn't really give him any pieces to help him out at all.
Everything they're doing points to them, like, having a hard reset. Like, they're not – it doesn't seem like they're interested in all at developing Fields right now. It's about getting, you know, 2-3 that years down the road and potentially taking their own quarterback.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've had a change. They've had in the front office there. So maybe that's what this is. This is setting up for just a complete reboot of that offense in the next year or two. Who will be the top scoring rookie in 2022?
We spoke a lot about him already, but I think it's Drake London. He could be used downfield in the red zone. I think volume is the biggest ingredient for year one success, and I don't think anyone walked into a better spot for volume than Drake London.
Yeah, I think this feels pretty easy because he's in a situation where he's going to get plenty of opportunity. So I think he's an easy call for the top scoring rookie. I was going to ask top scoring quarterback. I guess it's Kenny Pickett just sort of by default. Not that it's necessarily a guy that you're drafting or excited about, but I don't know, any chance it's not Kenny Pickett as the top scoring fantasy rookie quarterback?
I think, to be honest, Desmond Ridder is a dark horse there because I wouldn't be surprised if he starts early in the year and could add some more points with his legs. But I still think Kenny Pickett is the heavy, heavy favorite to lead that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going there too. All right, last one. Who is a rookie sleeper for 2022?
I was all set to say Damian Pierce, but I feel like some people are already taking notice of him, so I'll go a little bit deeper. I think Calvin Austin, he's so explosive. He's got speed for days. He was someone that I was excited to see where he lands, and he fell to Pittsburgh, who I know have other receivers, but there's a need for their slot guy, and I think Austin could maybe step in and fill that void right away. And if that's the case, I think he can be more productive than some people might think.
I'm gonna go kind of deep here, and this might be a deep, deep sleeper. And I'm gonna sort of take a page out of Lance Zierlein's book. Romeo Dubs from Nevada. Ooh. Is the guy the Packers got in the fourth round. And I know Lance has said he thinks Dubs could be even better for the Packers than Christian Watson could be. I feel like Watson has, again, I think he's sort of MVS, which means he has boom or bust potential. He's a good best ball option. So maybe Dubs has more of a kind of a well-rounded game. So I'm gonna say a guy who has an opportunity potentially to get on the field and could be catching passes from Aaron Rodgers. Feels like there's some sleeper potential there for him in Green Bay. That was a lot. We went through a lot. We went through a lot, and I feel like we didn't get through like half of it even at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with the draft.
So we'll obviously be talking more about this as the weeks go on. Maybe even try to get Lance Zierlein on. I know that he's a guy who does a lot. I know Lance every year writes about 500 profiles, which is a lot. Don't get me wrong. But after we talked to Emery Hunt and like the insane number of profiles that Emery writes, I'm like, 500, whatever.
I imagine like Lance and Emery, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, like they're all are like the Jimmy Butler gif at the after the end of the draft.
Oh, yeah. You know,
the one where he's just like can't even
just
stand,
hang
like
over the rail.
I just imagine that's all of them.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. What I would love, and maybe we'll ask Lance too, what his process is. Like I know for DJ, a lot of what he does is he watches film, but in the background, he's listening to like 90s R&B music. Like that's his thing. Like, and I'm like, I feel like everybody who does that has to have their, whether it's a certain kind of music they listen to, or if they're like, you know, eating something or drinking something. Like, I want to know what is your process for scouting. So maybe if we get Lance on, we can ask him that too as well. So, all right. That's it, man. Happy Star Wars Day again. Go, watch Clone Wars or one of the prequels, or rewatch Empire Strikes Back if that's what makes you happy. Do whatever.
Maybe Rogue One,
or just you put the Kenobi trailer on loop. That came out today too, so you can just
I gotta
have
check that out.
Yeah, go check it out. Go have that on loop. Over.
I know this podcast is super long, but I do. Have you been watching Better Call Saul?
Yes. Yeah, so I caught up. I watched Monday's episode last night.
Same.
It's like you knew this was coming. Like you knew that Jimmy McGill was going to morph into Saul Goodman, but it's no less heartbreaking sort of watching it happen.
It's so cool. Yeah, like spoiler alert, I guess, but it's so cool. Like the Mike and Kim, like when Kim was walking out of the restaurant, I was like, that's Mike, and that interaction, like seeing the whole story come together, it's so cool.
It's so cool. And I will say that this last episode was great. It was one of the best of the series, the entire series. I think it was one of easily the best of this season, one of the best of the entire series. So
the entire episode, I'm just feeling like something terrible is going to happen. Yep. And because it didn't, now I'm just like, I know next week something terrible.
So
is
now you have
happen.
That tension going into next week too, because something terrible eventually is going to happen and they're making us wait for it.
Even the episode before last night's or tonight, whatever it was, was so good. Like with Nacho. Oh,
yeah. So which, by the way, shout out to Tom Schnauz, who is one of the writers of that show. And also I know a fan of Fantasy Live. So, Tom, if you want to, slide in the DMs and give me like a spoiler on what happens, I promise I won't share it over the air, but I just want to know for my own personal benefit. So,
I don't like spoilers. I want to be shocked while I'm watching.
If you want to know that, if you want to drop that in there, I'll be grateful to find out. I know it's not going to happen, but I can ask anyway. All right. Enough of us babbling. That'll do it for this edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. Stay happy, safe, and healthy. Do good and live well. Enjoy Star Wars Day and Better Call Saul and anything else you're out there watching. And we will talk to you next week.